So, hey, fellow Middlers, this is Bill. Welcome to another edition of the Middlers Podcast. Yusuf could not be with us for this version or this edition of the podcast, so I'll be carrying this on my own. I'm really excited about the guest that we have on the Middlers Podcast for this episode. I'd like to introduce everybody, Chris Hale. Chris is a musician and a third culture kid and definitely a Middler, perhaps a very uncommon kind of Middler. So, Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Bill.
So, Chris, give us a little bit of background of where you live and your experience in South Asia, and just help us understand you a little bit better.
Well, I'm talking to you from Toronto, Canada right now. I'm a U.S. citizen, but I married a Canadian girl named Miranda Stone, and I've lived in Toronto for the last 8 years. But my mom and dad were medical doctors, and in 1970, they moved out to the country of Nepal, where my brother and myself grew up. I was 1.5 years old. We grew up in a small village outside Kathmandu that was, you know, a good old 8-hour walk from the nearest road, and lived there for essentially all my childhood life. And I attended boarding school in India. So I experienced India, and at the age of 18, I finally went back to the United States, where I went to college. But I guess I was in love with India and Nepal by that time, so after college, I went straight back, and throughout most of the 1990s, for another 8 or 9 years, I lived in North India doing music, until finally I came back to North America, where I've now lived for the last 12 years or so.
Excellent. Chris, thanks for sharing that with us. And the way that I came across Chris is Chris and I are friends through social media, but I came to learn of Chris's appreciation for music and his actual endeavors in music, which are with a group called Aradhana. So that's something I'd like to explore a little bit in a second. So Chris, back to your upbringing in India. So you are a North American. You look different than most Indians. You're white. And so in Nepal and in North India, especially in the era prior to a lot of South Asia opening up due to the current changes in the tech boom and Fortune 500 companies coming to the region, which is more of a last 15 years phenomenon, how would you summarize what it was like to grow up in a culture different than the one your parents came from?
Well, I grew up learning Nepali and English simultaneously. I always considered myself somewhat of a native Nepali, even though I was aware of my skin color. And, you know, it's always difficult to be the one person who's white among a sea of brown faces. And I received a good bit of bullying because of that as a kid. I don't know whether that's any different now than it was then, because I was in a very, very remote village. It's always a situation where there are advantages and disadvantages to being the different one or the odd one out. And I had plenty of both. I just remember how fun it was to be able to sit in a bus somewhere and pretend like I didn't speak a local language, and to have people talking about me, and then to just spill the beans on them and then start to talk in their own local accent with all their choice phrases that they would appreciate, and then to instantly find that they were both embarrassed by the fact that they'd been talking about me, but also we'd become instant friends after that, and then we'd just be chatting, and there was a sense of being one of them. So I was able to be not one of them if I wanted to, but then the moment I wanted to become part of the community, I just start speaking, and it was the speech which would open the doors for me. So you can picture advantages there, and you can also picture the disadvantages, the feeling of, oh, I'm white, so maybe I'm hated, maybe people don't like me. Because sometimes, people would speak rude things about me. But I found that I could always, just by a nice smile and a little choice phrase, it would turn all that rudeness into lots of apologies and becoming the, you know, what would seem like the best of friends.
Fantastic. So, Chris, based on that description, kya aapko Nepali aur Hindi baat karte hai?
Main bilkul Hindi mein baat kar sakta hoon. Nepali ma pani ma kura garna sakchu.
Theek hai. Kya Hindi aur Nepali milte julte hai?
Thodi bahut milte julte hain, lekin Indian log khas Nepali jab Nepali sunte hain, wo log kuch samajh mein nahi aata. Lekin Nepali log jab Hindi sunte hain, kyunki Hindi film ke dwara wo Nepali log bilkul Hindi samajh lete hain. So what I'm saying is Indians have a hard time understanding Nepalis, but Nepalis really don't have as much a hard time understanding Indians because of the Hindi films that they love to watch.
Yeah, I followed that. So if any English speakers didn't follow any of that, I asked if the languages were similar and that he spoke both. So, Chris, we may be in really uncharted territory with two white guys speaking Hindi back and forth. So that might be an internet first. I don't know.
I love it.
Absolutely. So, great. Thanks for that. Hey, Chris, your passion is music and your talent is music. And I am a fan, so I'm revealing my bias by telling everybody that Aradhana is just great to listen to, both in terms of the style of music and the content, much of which I follow in terms of the spiritual, Christ-centered content. Tell us a little bit about Aradhana. Tell us kind of how you became a midler in a musical sense.
Well, it's interesting. I was when I was in India in the 1990s, after I came back from college, music college in the States, I actually formed a rock band. And I did that because, you know, growing up in boarding school in India, you know, all of us, whether we were white or whether we were Indian, we listened to rock music. We weren't as interested in Indian music. And so when I was in India, I played rock music. But towards the end of that time, my friend Pete Hicks from Atlanta, Georgia, who had been born in India but never lived in India, he came to join that rock band, which was called Olio. And the two of us, we lived together in Lucknow, and we discovered this sound of the sitar, which I had been studying all that time but not using in live concert. We discovered the sound of sitar and acoustic guitar, and it was something that we just really fell in love with around 1998, 1999. And it really spelled for me the end of what I was doing with the rock music and the desire to go all out to just play this sitar acoustic guitar stuff with Pete. And that's what birthed Aradhana.
Fantastic. So the style, the specific style of Indian music, and let's just say South Asian music, because I think some of the styles that you would borrow from probably have the roots outside of modern day India. Ghazals and bhajan, say a little bit more in depth about the styles that you borrow from and how you use your music to convey a message that's important to you.
Well, there's a few streams. The bhajan style, which is basically devotional music of South Asia, particularly coming from the Hindu traditions of bhakti. Bhakti simply means personal devotion to God. In the sort of the Muslim world, it's more the Sufi style of music, the qawwali, which is comparable to the bhajan in that way, and that is probably the most influential style of South Asian music in our Aradhana group. But there's also Indian classical music. Indian classical music has vocal as well as instrumental. And because of my sitar studies in Lucknow and then now with my guru, Partha Chatterjee, a lot of Indian classical influences come into our more recent work with Aradhana. And also our tabla player, Jim Feist, he's classically trained. He was a student of Zakir Hussain's father, Alaraka, and now studies with Yogesh Samsi, who's also a student of Alaraka, Khan Saab. So, not Khan Saab, but Alaraka. He just goes by Alaraka. those Indian classical influences have come into our music. And then, of course, there's Pete, who brings in the Western rock music into what we do.
Great, great. Hey, Chris, let me ask you a question. So you have a unique set of roots, certainly a unique way of expressing music devotionally, pretty rare. Growing up in India, or since you've embraced creating music through Aradhana, my experience was very short-lived, as you know, 2 years on the ground and there under the premise of helping a Fortune 50 company, right? So pretty different. But when I made observations on the ground in India, I found it overwhelmingly, it appeared to be a pretty tolerant place for people across faiths. With that said, every once in a while something flares up that reminds you there's some deeper inherent tensions there. Have you ever had any pushback saying, hey, this isn't your music, that's not a message that belongs in this musical style, or has it always been one that's been relatively comfortable with listeners?
Well, I would say that we've had very rare pushbacks, almost so rare that the one or two we've had sort of stand out as these big stories, but probably just not worth mentioning as stories since they're so rare. You know, music itself obviously is a fantastic bridge builder, but can also put up barriers. You know, if I was to play heavy metal music for my grandmother, it would not be a bridge builder. But I would say that music can be an amazing bridge builder, and I would say that Aradhana particularly has seen in our music that we've built more bridges than we've had anything torn down. And yes, our music, our lyrical focus is on Yeshu, or Isa, the name in South Asia for Jesus. And though that may be strange when we're applying that that name to the music of bhajans, it is not so strange that we've had any opposition to it. I would say that the tradition of bhakti, which began around the 6th century AD, has been a very open tradition. It's been a tradition that has welcomed women to worship God, has welcomed all castes to worship God, and so it is an open tradition. And therefore, it's an open tradition to having God worshipped in many different ways. And so worshipping God as with the name Yeshu is something that is an acceptable thing within the bhakti traditions. Of course, you know, there are fundamentalists in every religion, and so these kinds of experiments or these kinds of differing things can be frightening or offensive to some of those. But I would say that the majority of people in the world do not share those kinds of thoughts. So that's why we've had such an amazing openness to what we do.
Excellent, excellent, Chris. Chris, before I ask another question, I want to make sure that any listener whose interest is piqued about Aradhana knows where to go to learn more. And if somebody is not as conversant in how to spell out a Hindi or Sanskrit word, if you would spell the band, the name of the band, as well as just give a nod toward the website, I think that would be useful for folks.
Okay. Well, first of all, Aradhana, when spelled in English, can be spelled in a couple different ways. And the typical way that my Indian friends spell it is not the way that we spell it. We spelled it in a way so that Westerners could say it more easily, Aradhana. And we spell it A-R-A, D for David, H for Henry, and then N for never, and then A. So Aradhana. And for the website, it's Aradhana Music, MUSIC.com, AradhanaMusic.com.
Thanks for that, Chris. So, Chris, you know, one last question from my side. There's a phenomenon that more my wife than I, but we as a couple picked up on through some speakers that came through Hyderabad during our time there and through some books that exist. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, there was a tweet that I saw where it mentioned that this week. You might have put it out there on my Twitter feed that mentioned a phenomenon I'd like you to describe a little bit, a third culture kid. You know, say a little bit about what that is from a paradigm perspective, and then a little bit about what it was like to be a third culture kid or what it's like to be a third culture guy these days. I think that'd be really interesting to the listening audience.
Well, what's it like to be a third culture kid?
Yeah, and what does it mean? If somebody's hearing that for the first time, what does that term mean, and what was it like, and what is it like to be one?
Well, what I understand it to be is how I'm different than my parents, essentially. My parents lived for 25 years in Nepal, but they essentially retained the culture that they grew up in as children in North America. And even while they were living in Nepal, and although they learned the language, although they love Nepal, although they know so much about Nepal, and probably know more about Nepal than I do, they still are essentially Americans with a sense of that cultural closeness to being American. Whereas myself, yes, I was born American, I am white, but having grown up over in Nepal from a small age, I identify in a sense as being Nepali or being Indian. And that identity is a deep ingrown thing because of childhood. And I think that's what makes me a third culture kid, because obviously the Nepalis who see me don't look on me as Nepali. They never will until I start to speak with them, until I start to sing. But even then, there would be a certain surprise, a delightful surprise, but still, I would never quite be accepted, never quite be accepted as just simply one of them. And the same thing happens when I'm in the United States. I mean, you already pointed out that you noticed a slight accent. Well, whatever that accent is or wherever it comes from, it's not fully an American accent, so I will never be able to be fully American. I'll always be an anomaly, always be somebody who's slightly different. So there, that's where the third thing comes in. I'm from some kind of third culture. It's something else. It's something unique. And it's and of course, the best way to approach it, and you know, it's taken me years. I think probably only when I was 35 years old did I finally come to a place of real acceptance of what it meant to be who I was. Yeah, you know, people like me sometimes take a longer time to figure out how to get married to the right person. You know, I'm married now to the right person. At age 35, finally found the girl who would understand India and understand the West in such a way that would make our marriage successful. But that's just one aspect that can become a really rich thing or can become a really difficult and challenging thing for those who call ourselves third culture kids.
Fantastic insights there. You know, Chris, I'll share with you and with the listeners, our experience was a little bit different because we were, while living in India, part of a community that was inherently short-term, right? Most folks there were in a 2 to 4 year, I'm sorry, most other expats, just to be more clear, were on a 2 to 4 year window of time. And we found a really interesting phenomenon. Friendships were very deep, were very immediate, and very gratifying, but they were brief. And people that we had met that had spent a significant number of years, even decades, forming deep but brief friendships took it with great ease, but something like getting married, I've heard, is a bit of a challenge for third culture kids or adults, in the sense that a relationship that spans decades and the remainder of one's life is not necessarily one that's cultivated in a transient environment like we experienced. I sense you're a little bit different, but did you have any... do you think from a developing relationships perspective that you were deeply impacted by growing up as a third culture kid?
Well, I can honestly say that, you know, all my former girlfriends had a lot of trouble for me while I was trying to sort this stuff out because of exactly what you're saying. I knew how to form really, really close friendships, but I would form a really close friendship, and then the next thing I knew to do was to leave, to go across the ocean, and then not be in touch with that close friend for 6 months to a year, and then write a really intimate, close letter to them and assume that that was just fine. And my girlfriends didn't see it that way. They, you know, it was something that they couldn't accept. And of course, it was not a healthy way to live. I think that I learned a lot when I finally did learn to commit. I learned to commit to the daily relationship and to see that real depth is in the daily commitment, the lifelong commitment that ultimately you find in marriage. But it did take me a really long time to learn that, if you consider 35 years a long time.
Yep, definitely. Well, Chris Hale, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on the Midler's podcast. I'd like to, at the end of the podcast, blend in music and fade out to the beginning of a song and play it in its fullness. I'd like to play Padre Nam. Do I have your permission to do that?
Absolutely. Feel free.
Fantastic. Well, once again, thank you so much, Chris Hale from Aradhana. Very insightful conversation. Really appreciate you taking the time, and namaste.
Namaste.
Bhajo naam, japo naam, pyara naam, Yeshu naam, chai subah ho ya sham, chai subah ho ya sham, Yeshu naam re. Sab bhakti karo mil gao Yeshu naam re. Bhajo naam, japo naam, pyara naam, Yeshu naam, chai subah ho ya sham, chai subah ho ya sham, Yeshu naam re. Sab bhakti karo mil gao Yeshu naam re. भक्त बिना भक्ति अधूरी ख्रिस्त शरण तुझे आना झाड़ दे अपनी शक्ति पर ख्रिस्त मोह लगाना भक्त बिना भक्ति अधूरी ख्रिस्त शरण तुझे आना झाड़ दे अपनी शक्ति पर ख्रिस्त मोह लगाना जीवन अर्पण कर दो प्रभु में प्रभु की आशीष पाना है Bhajo naam, japo naam, pyara naam, Yeshu naam, chai subah ho ya sham, chai subah ho ya sham, Yeshu naam re. Sab bhakti karo mil gao, Yeshu naam re.
Aap ke raah ko chhod nahi, swarg ki manzil paana hai. चैन नहीं सर पिता को जाना है
I leave this way of darkness my goal is eternal life this world holds nothing for me I only want to know my heavenly father
राह को छोड़ना है स्वर्ग की मंजिल पाना इस दुनिया में चैन नहीं स्वर्ग पिता को जाना पाप की राह को छोड़ना है स्वर्ग की मंजिल पाना इस दुनिया में चैन नहीं स्वर्ग पिता को जाना है शांति मुक्ति का मार्ग वही है उसमें मोह लगाना है
Just love, yeah, shine, yeah, shine, yeah. So practical, yeah.
जो नाम जपो राम प्यारा नाम यीशु नाम चाहे सुबह हो या शाम चाहे सुबह हो या शाम यीशु नाम रे अब भक्ति करो मिल गाओ यीशु नाम रे जपो नाम प्यारा नाम यीशु नाम चाहे सुबह हो या शाम चाहे सुबह हो या शाम यीशु नाम सर्व भक्ति करो लगाओ यीशु नाम